are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. Last show, we were looking at Chapter 1, which essentially looking at the nature of the multiplier effect. Chapter 2, we're going to be looking at the talent magnet. I not only use all the brains that I have, but also all that I can borrow, Woodrow Wilson. When you walk up to the porch of her house in Menlo Park, California, you can sense that Meg Whitman, CEO of eBay, has spent time on the East Coast. With its saltbox shape and white wood, it is one of those West Coast houses that looks like it should actually be in New England. The house just might remind Meg of her time at Cambridge, Massachusetts, while she was in business school. It was September 2007 and early in the race for the 2008 presidential nomination. There were many interesting candidates vying for the ticket for both parties. That day was a chance for us locals to get a peek at one of the candidates. And for me, it was a chance to extend our research and gain insight into two interesting leaders. As the guests gathered on her backyard lawn, Meg Whitman took the microphone and began to introduce Mitt Romney as a candidate for President of the United States. Her introduction was simple. I was a young consultant at Bain & Company and had the good fortune to work for Mitt Romney early in my career. After we were all hired, all of the new consultants scrambled to get on Mitt's project teams. Why? The word spread that he was the best boss to work for because he knew how to lead a team and he grew his people. Everyone grew around Mitt. You can imagine Meg, a newly minted Harvard MBA, ready to make her mark on the business world. Like many MBAs, she chose to begin her career at Bain & Company, an elite business consulting firm. But she knew landing in the right place inside would determine how quickly she'd learn and advance her career and her value in the marketplace. She heard from one of the more senior consultants, "If you're smart, you'll find a spot on Mitt Romney's team." She didn't quite know why Mitt was such a great boss, but being savvy, she maneuvered her way onto his team. She learned why when she started working with him. On Mitt's team, people were engaged. He took the time to get to know each person and to understand the capabilities they brought to the team. This went well beyond reviewing their resume. Mitt would determine what people were naturally good at and find the way to use those talents with the client engagement. In assigning people to roles, Mitt asked questions like, "What is the next challenge for you? What would be a stretch assignment?" It wasn't unusual for someone on Mitt's team to get loaned out to another group if their skills would help rescue a troubled project. In one-on-one meetings, Mitt not only asked about the status of project deliverables, he asked about the blockers. A favorite question is, what is getting in the way of your being successful? Meanwhile, many of Meg's colleagues didn't get the same guidance and found themselves working for more typical company leaders who were more concerned with advancing their own careers than growing with the people on their team. Team meetings typically consisted of long briefings from project leaders, followed by the usual project updates from each of the consultants who reported on progress in their functional area. People stuck to their roles on the team. When one person was struggling, he or she usually suffered in silence and pulled a few all-nighters rather than relying on help from colleagues. The job got done, but individual efforts were not acknowledged. The only visible recognition were kudos given to the project leader and an increase in the size of his or her organization. As for the destiny of the project members, they were almost certainly guaranteed a role on the next project that closely resembled what they had done on the last project. In any organization, there are talent magnets, people who attract the best talent, utilize it to the fullest, and ready it for the next stage. There are leaders who have a reputation not only for delivering results, but for creating a place where young, talented people can grow. They are accelerators to other people's careers. Mitt Romney operated as a talent magnet. He accelerated the career of Meg Whitman, who went on to be CEO of eBay and led an 88 times increase in revenue. Not only did he have this impact on Meg, Mitt was a magnet and an accelerator in the careers of hundreds of people in a similar story. Perhaps you are a talent magnet. Would your people describe you as someone who recognizes talented people, draws them in, and utilizes them at their fullest? Would they say they have grown more around you than any other manager that they have worked for? Would they describe you as someone who pulled them into your organization, not as a talent to be developed, but more of a resource to be deployed and then left to languish? Would they perhaps say that they were heavily recruited but not given a meaningful role, rather than just a visible role and served as a showpiece or hood ornament in your organization? Some leaders are like magnets that draw in talent and develop it to its fullest. Other leaders acquire resources to build their empire. This chapter explores the difference between these two approaches to the management of talent and the impact that these leaders have on people around them. The empire builders versus the talent magnet. Multipliers operate as talent magnets. They attract talented people and then use them to their fullest. You might think of it as working at their highest point of contribution. They get access to the best talent, not because they're necessary great recruiters, but rather because people flock to work for them. As Meg Whitman found Mitt Romney, people seek out a talent magnet. They do so knowing their capabilities would be appreciated, and knowing their value will also appreciate in the marketplace. In contrast, diminishers operate as empire builders who hoard resources and underutilize talent. They bring in top talent and make big promises, but they underutilize their people and disenchant them. Why? Because they are often amassing the resources for self-promotion and for their own gain. Empire builders accumulate people. They collect people like knickknacks in a curio cabinet, on display for everyone to see, but not well utilized. Each of these approaches produces a self-perpetuating cycle. The talent magnet spawns a vicious circle of attraction, and the empire builder spawns a vicious cycle of decline. A cycle of attraction. In 1914, Ernest Shackleton, the venerated British explorer, embarked on an expedition to traverse Antarctica. His recruitment advertisement in the Times read as follows: "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months in complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success." Surprisingly, hundreds of men applied. Shackleton, with the wisdom of an experienced captain, staffed his crew with men of certain orientation, men who were attracted to adventure and recognition, but who were also realistically prepared for the hardships that they would be facing. No doubt, Shackleton's ability to attract the right team was one key factor in the survival of every member of his expedition. The cycle of attraction begins with a leader possessing the confidence and magnetism to surround him or herself with key players, sheer, raw talent, and the right mix of intelligence needed for the challenge. Under the leadership of the talent magnet, the genius of these players gets discovered and utilized to the fullest. Having been stretched, these players become smarter and more capable. As players become A-plus players, these people are positioned in the spotlight to get kudos and recognition for their work. They attract attention, and their value increases in the talent marketplace internally or externally. These A-plus players get offered even bigger opportunities and seize them with the full support of the talent magnet. And then the cycle kicks into hyperdrive. As the pattern of utilization, growth, and opportunity occurs across multiple people, others in the organization notice, and the leader of the organization gets a reputation. They build a reputation as the place to grow. This reputation spreads, and more A players flock to work in the talent magnet's organization, so there's a steady flow of talent in the door, replacing talent growing out of the organization. This cycle of attraction outlined below is exactly what happened to Mitt Romney and Bain at Bain & Company, and why Meg Whitman knew to join his particular organization. So, number one, choose the best A-class players. And the result is you get fully utilized in the talent magnets organization, and so they grow. So then they become A-plus players. The A-plus players get recognized. This increases the market value of the organization and also the market value of the individuals. They get offered new opportunities. The organization gets a reputation for the place to go to grow. This attracts other A players. And then the cycle continues. A talent magnet creates a powerful force that attracts talent, then accelerates the growth and intelligence and capability. These leaders operate like an electromagnetic force that, through interactions between atoms, propels matter in the universe. A cycle of decline. For many years, I had the pleasure of working closely with a colleague named Brian Beckham, a brilliant and affable Canadian. Brian had a reputation for being smart, optimistic, collaborative, and could just solve about any complex problem that got tossed his way. This reputation earned him a key role as the vice president of operations in a rapidly growing division. The problem was that the division was run by an uncontrolled diminisher, and determined empire builder. Brian went to work solving the complex problems of the emerging division. However, he soon found that the SVP running the division didn't really want the underlying issues addressed. The SVP wanted one thing: grow an empire. And he wanted growth at all costs. Brian's role quickly degenerated into window dressing, where he and his team fixed issues on the surface just enough so the executive committee would continue to fund additional headcount in the organization. For many months, Brian continued to pursue his work at full throttle, but deep problems were festering at the core of the division. With continued indifference from his manager, Brian became numb and started to settle into mediocrity. He lost good players on his team. When other leaders in the company saw the depth of the problems in this division, Brian's Midas touch reputation quickly tarnished. After several years hanging in there hoping for things to improve, he found himself stuck in a dying organization, watching his opportunities fade. Soon, Brian became one of the walking dead that roam the halls of many organizations. On the outside, these zombies go through the motions, but on the inside, they've given up. They quit and stay. It was painful to watch this happen to Brian, whom I knew to be an absolute superstar. No doubt, you would have seen this happen to colleagues in other organizations, or have been there yourself. Is it possible this is happening inside your organization? Empire builders create a vicious cycle of decline. Talent recruited into organizations becomes disengaged and goes stale. The cycle of decline begins much like the cycle of attraction, which is why it is easy to be deceived by diminishers. Empire builders seek to surround themselves with A players, but unlike talent magnets, they accumulate talent to appear smarter and more powerful. The leader glosses over the real genius of the people while placing them into boxes on an organizational chart. The A players have limited impact and start to look more like A-minus or B-plus players. They fail to get noticed for their work, and they lose intellectual confidence. They begin to recede into the shadow of the empire builder. Their value in the job market drops, and opportunities begin to evaporate. So they stay and wait, hoping things will turn around. This cycle of degeneration impacts not only one person, it infects the entire organization. The organization becomes an elephant graveyard, earning a reputation as the place to go to die. As one technology superstar said of his empty vice president job, "I'm definitely past my sell-by date here." The resignation in his voice made it clear. If he were milk, he'd be curdled. Empire builders, having earned their reputation as career killers, continuously struggle to get truly top talent into their organizations. Perhaps this is why they labor hard to hone the resources that they have. Empire builders may initially be able to attract top talent, but their focus is on building themselves and their organizations utilizes the true talent that they have in their organization and renders it stagnant and inert. They generate a cycle of decline that spirals downward as illustrated below. A players in the organization are hired. They get boxed in and limited by the restrictive culture created by the empire builder. So they become A-minus players. They lose confidence and recede further. They now have decreased market value, so they stay and wait. The organization division becomes gets a reputation as a place to die. So other A players avoid going to work for the organization or the division, and rather it attracts B players who wish to just coast rather than shine. In general, empire builders hoard resources and underutilize talent. Talent magnets attract talented people and use them at their highest point of contribution. Let's explore the world of the talent magnet, these multipliers who create a cycle of attraction and grow intelligence around them. The talent magnet. So we're going to be looking at the talent magnet after the break.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Are you interested in alternative power sources? Why not attend the free Green Roof Solar and Wind Energy Forum? It's an open discussion on practical ideas on green roofs, solar and wind power for condos and houses, as well as planning for future field trips to green homes and buildings. They take place from 5 till 7 p.m. every third Saturday of the month at the Main Street Cafe, located at 2616 Main and Broadway, Vancouver.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We're looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon, and also a foreword by Stephen Covey. We're on the section now looking at the details of what makes a talent magnet. The talent magnet creates a cycle of attraction and accelerates performance and grows geniuses. But does this only work for top talent, for the A players in the market? Or can it be a true talent magnet, find and grow genius everywhere and with everyone? Hexil AG, a maker of generic drugs, is located in one small village close to Munich, Germany. Hexil was founded in 1986 by twin brothers and self-made entrepreneurs, Thomas and Andreas Stugoman. Andreas, a doctor, is a medical authority, and Thomas is the international marketing genius between Hexil. These brothers teamed their expertise to build a successful generic drug company, grown primarily from the local talent pool in the village. What makes the company unique is that its approach to talent is anything but generic. It is an approach that gets extraordinary results from very ordinary people. It starts with how these leaders hire people into their companies. Anyone who has been in the hiring manager's seat knows the process can be difficult and can be painful. In order to find the right candidate, you know you will have to waste a lot of time interviewing the wrong candidates. This is particularly frustrating because you typically know they are the wrong candidates in the first 3 minutes of a job interview. But regardless, you feel compelled to proceed with the obligatory 60-minute interview and the pleasantries of "we'll get back to you." Stugelman brothers cut right to the chase. When they were looking for a general manager for Hexil in the Netherlands, they began with the normal actions. They engaged an external recruiter, gave her job requirements, and then waited for a list of candidates. The recruiter brought forward 9 candidates, but when they did something, then they did something quite unusual. They made arrangements to conduct interviews in a single day in a rented conference room in the Schiphol Airport, just outside Amsterdam. The recruiter reviewed their planned interview schedule and was shocked. They had allowed just 10 minutes per interview. She called to inform them that it was impossible to interview so quickly. The Stugenman brothers disagreed. They met with each candidate for just 3 minutes, every candidate except their final candidate, with whom they spent 3 hours. They explained their unusual approach. "When we consider each person, we ask one or two questions. If they don't fit, we simply don't continue the conversation. If the person is individualistic, we know that he or she won't fit into our culture. When we find someone who will fit throughout our company, we then spend a lot of time with this person to make sure that we understand everything about their capabilities and what they will bring to our organization." The Stugenman brothers know how to spot and attract the right talent. Once people joined Hextall, they discovered another one of the Stugerman's unconventional practices. Hextall doesn't have jobs per se, but they don't have an organizational chart. This isn't like some elite organizations that choose not to publish their organizational chart for fear some other company will snatch up their talent. Hextall doesn't have an organizational chart because the Stugermans don't believe in them. Jobs are loosely created around people's interests and unique capabilities. They call the approach the amoeba model. And here's how it works. Ursula's responsibility was to assist the customer service manager. In her role, she saw a large number of repetitive requests for the same action and was continuously updating people on the status of these requests. She had an idea that was to use the internet to create a workflow tracking system. She wrote up a little proposal and sent the idea around to her colleagues in an email asking, "What do you think about it?" Some people replied to the email and others stopped by her desk to discuss it in person, but everyone agreed that it was a good idea and wanted to see it happen. She gathered the people she needed, secured some budget, and got the system built through makeshift teams. The team then presented the system to the Stugermann brothers, who applauded their efforts and Ursula's leadership initiative. These twin brothers simply believed that if an idea got support from a lot of people, then most likely it was a good idea. At Hextall, you could work wherever there was energy. Though encouraging their employees to use this heat-seeking approach, they were able to utilize people at their highest point of contribution. They didn't box people into jobs and limit their contributions. They let people work where they had ideas and energy and where they could best contribute. They let talent flow like an amoeba to the right opportunities. There are clearly multiple reasons for their success. But it is interesting to note that the Stugermann brothers sold Hextall, along with the holdings in another company, to Novartis in 2005 for $7.6 billion. At the age of 55, each of them was worth $3.8 billion. As they led Hextall, the Stugermann brothers got extraordinary results from very ordinary people. Why? Because these twin talent managers knew how to unleash people's genius into the organization. How does a talent manager find and unleash genius? In the four practices of the talent magnet, we find some of the answers. And in the next show, we're going to be looking at the four practices of the talent magnet that make them such a good manager, allowing them to bring out the true genius and talent of their employees and their consultants. So please stay tuned and look forward to the next show.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Tenneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio Salmon Fraser 90.1 FM.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.